Daddy, what are you doing?
I'm doing a podcast, Dizzy.
Hello and welcome to the Too Cool for School podcast. I am your host, Yannick, and on today's episode, we have a special guest and we'll be talking about the experiences of teaching abroad. So I'll allow her to introduce herself.
Hi everyone, my name is Kemi. I'm an experienced educator, teacher, science teacher. I'm also the founder of the Black Teachers Network and an author.
Okay, great stuff. You know what? I didn't know you was a science teacher.
Qualified as a science teacher years ago, yeah. What subject did you think I taught?
I don't know. You know when someone just says they're a teacher, I don't even think beyond that. I just stop at they're a teacher and I don't really dive into like...
Wait, what subject did you teach?
I was doing pastoral and safeguarding, so that's interesting. Science. Yeah. You like science?
I love science in school.
Yeah. Mm. Out of like the three, like physics, biology.
But everyone says biology was chemistry.
The easiest.
Do you know what? I don't agree with that.
You don't?
I don't.
I found it easier.
I found it easier because I was more interested in it.
Okay, fair enough.
But I wouldn't say it's the easiest one. Yeah. Actually, everyone has their own opinion. But chemistry is actually my favourite now.
Chemistry? That's interesting.
So I've actually moved from biology to chemistry.
And up to like what age or level?
A-level biology.
A-level?
Yeah.
Is there ever a point where like you're sort of like preparing for like the content or a student asks you a question, you're like, oh, that's a bit difficult. Seriously.
That happened one time with one of my A-level students. And I was just like, you know what, let me get back to you on that. But that's a very good question. And I want you to think about that overnight. So our next lesson, you can maybe do some research and come back to me as well.
Then
we can
discuss. That's how you played it off. Yeah, fair enough. And why is it that you didn't know that question?
Don't do that. don't do that.
No, just out of curiosity, are you?
He caught me off guard. I don't know. I can't even remember what it was, but I was just like, I don't know. He asked me a question that I think is actually more like university biology level.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know how to answer that. I was just like, wait, I totally wasn't sure how to answer that question. And I don't want to answer it wrong.
Yeah, that's
so
fair enough.
I'd rather just research it and come back to you next lesson with the right information.
Yeah. To what extent do like teachers like not only prepare themselves for the lesson but build up their knowledge within like the expertise?
Area.
Like, do you always need to keep studying, or once you know it and you know it, that's it?
I think it depends. So for example, if it's like photosynthesis, just like it's basic, you know, I know that I don't need to go and study that again. But you know, when it comes to different things like ethics and transplant and embryonic stem cells, I know this sounds a bit weird, but like I would do more research and things are changing over time. So okay. I would actually be able to, I read scientific journals as well sometimes.
Yeah.
Or I just see like what is current or, you know, in the world of science and stuff. I do CPD on that as well. So I'm able to bring in my knowledge from outside the classroom, infuse it with my lessons so the students can apply it to, you know, the wider world.
So you see the way science evolves. And you know what? I'm going off on a tangent because I just find this interesting. So you see how the sort of thinking is that science evolves. Does that mean that things that, you know, you and I would have learnt when we were in school, like it could evolve in a way that, like let's say 10, 15, 20 years time, like could photosynthesis be like seen different?
I don't think so.
I'm using photosynthesis as an example, just, but I don't really,
but because
I've got a C
because
for
of
science,
how so. Basic photosynthesis is, in my mind, I feel like it's not going to change. Plants need water and carbon dioxide.
But is there like other aspects of science where like something might change over time?
So like that's the example I was giving to you about like when we look at genetic diseases.
Yeah.
When we look at embryonic stem cells, ethics, morals, like is it right or wrong to, you know, maybe terminate a pregnancy if you see that a child has maybe an abnormality or chromosomal defect or something like that.
Yeah.
So those kind of things over time, as you're learning more about DNA, as you're learning more about like DNA or just things like that, that would kind of change how maybe things are taught as well.
Yeah.
And also the use of technology, now that people are using more tech in their lessons, Yeah. It's not just, let me give you a periodic table and you just kind of go off and do that. Let's kind of do a bit more research. Let's use like simulations when it comes to creating circuits and stuff like that in physics or, yeah.
No, that's cool. That's cool. That's very interesting. You mentioned that you are the founder of BTN, so the Black Teachers Network. So can you tell us a bit more about that and what essentially inspired you to sort of create that network?
Yeah, so basically I realized back in 2013, 2014, when I was doing my teacher training, that I was the only Black person in my cohort and there were a lot of us.
What's and a lot?
In that cohort, less than 200.
That's a lot.
Less than 200. To be the only
Black person in anything.
Yeah. And it was when we would go for like our subject specific days and I would look around and I was the only Black person. There was only one other Asian girl. And I thought to myself, this is 2014, not 1954. Why is it like this? Mm. And then I remember one day when I was still living in my parents' house, I was just sitting in my room and I just thought, what is the actual percentage of Black teachers in education in England? So I went onto the gov.uk website and I was very shocked to see at the time it was less than 2%. And I thought that was actually a very disgusting statistic. Mm-hmm. So I just put it out there on Twitter at the time. Is there anyone that wants to, any fellow Black teachers that would like to meet up just to kind of chop it up and see how we can support each other? Because I was feeling like I wanted to leave teaching. Wow. I didn't really feel like I had people who understood some of the things or the microaggressions that I had experienced. And then before I knew it, like, I went to bed, I woke up the next day and I had so many notifications, like over like 1,000 retweets or something like that.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not, I don't have a social media presence. So I genuinely thought maybe I had said something wrong on social media.
Yeah.
And like, maybe I'm getting cancelled. For
that.
Yeah, literally, yeah. I was scared, like, wait, what's going on? Then when I saw people like, yeah, I saw so many DMs like, yeah, let's meet, let's get people together. I was like, wow, okay, we've got something here. And then that was late 2018 when I started it. Started putting it together, and then 2019 we just hit the ground running and we had like an event every month that year. And 2020 we moved to online because of lockdown and we started doing things for students as well. And now 2025 we've also moved to the UAE where we're supporting Black teachers in the UAE as well, so UK as well as UAE.
Yeah. That's amazing. So what were some of the things that you were doing? Okay, so you've got, you know, all of these you know, teachers from various, you know, ethnic backgrounds. So they're coming together. Like, what was the purpose in the coming together? Like, could you share some of the activities that you guys were sort of getting involved in?
Yeah. So the purpose of coming together was to really have a safe space where we can support each other. It's not just a ground for venting, but it's like, sometimes I am frustrated in my school or in my role. And is anyone who has been here that understands that can help me? So it's definitely to support one another and to share good practice. Some of the events we have done for teachers and to support one another, we've had sharing good practice within different subjects, as well as a senior leadership event where we had Black men and women in various levels of senior leadership, from like CEOs, deputies, head teachers, who came and told us like what their journey was like. We had an event in the House of Commons with Diane Abbott on the importance of having representation in education and what it means for not just Black students, but students of all backgrounds. We had a collaboration with NHS, which is part of our community give back, which is raising awareness on the importance of giving blood, especially within the Black community.
Yeah.
We've also had some socials where we had our 1 year anniversary brunch at a few years ago in Usain Bolt's restaurant, Tracks and Records. We've had another Easter brunch. We've had subject days. We had a North London hub, a South London hub. A range of different events where it's not just about the subject that we teach, but also things we can do to support each other's community. We also had a Black Men in Ed, which was led by one of the members in the Black Teachers Network team, Dami. And we had like 150 Black men show up to that.
That's amazing.
And that was, wait, no, not 150. Let's bring that number down. It was 120. About 120 Black men show up at an event in central London. And that was great. And it was solely just for Black men, just for them to have that safe space as well. We've also had things around finance where a lot of people don't know how to negotiate their salaries. So what can you do to make sure you can leverage yourself, or just make yourself look, or not just make yourself look, but have the evidence that you need to show, this is the money that I'm looking for and this is how I'm going to negotiate because it's what I feel that I'm worth.
Yeah. That's amazing. And in terms of like the personnel that you had sort of attending, like how far was the reach in terms of like, was this London solely? And in terms of the experiences of the teachers that were coming, was it just like teaching, or did you have like department leads, SLT members, you know, head teachers, CEOs of academies, like whatever that may be? Like how far was the reach?
So the reach in terms of the events, we had people come from like Bristol, the Midlands, further up north, mainly London. When it came to the positions that we had of people in education, we had people who were CEOs, of trusts. We had head teachers, deputies, assistant heads. We had middle leaders, pastoral leaders as well, heads of year, safeguarding officers. We had Ed Sykes, Senkos, people who worked for the council. Anyone who worked in education in some capacity, we wanted to do something that would support them, or in the ways that they can support teachers to make sure that they are improving their practice and how we're serving our students.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I know you've mentioned as well when we were speaking beforehand about your transition from the UK to moving abroad. What was the decision making behind that? Because I often find that, you know, a lot of people talk, oh yeah, you know, I'm going to move abroad and I'm going to start working abroad. But, you know, they just say it in jest and no one really, you know, makes those moves. Like what was the decision making behind that? And practically, what was the process? And I ask because I know there's going to be, you know, viewers, audience, like young teachers that are thinking about actually, you know, let me try out teaching abroad. But sometimes people don't know like the practicality of things. Is it just as simple as, you know, CV jobs, Dubai type version, or is it a different sort of application process? So it would be good to know, first of all, what your thinking was behind why you decided to move and practically the steps you took, you know, to make that possible.
So I decided to move because where I was working at the time, I got into a point where I realised there was no further progression for me. And I didn't want to just feel like I was stagnant. I loved working there, but it just, I wasn't sure what was next. So I just thought to myself, okay, I'm not married yet. I don't have children yet. Now is the time that will be easier, or the easiest time for me to move and to just take that leap of faith and see how it is. So I spoke to the head teacher at the time and I made my, you know, intentions clear that I won't be staying the next academic year. This is what I plan on doing because I had a good relationship with SLT. And what I did is that I started connecting with people who were teaching in Dubai because I usually go to Dubai on holiday anyway. So I like being there, but I wasn't too sure how to get myself into a school, a good school. And of course you can go on things like TES or Guardian Jobs and apply for jobs there, but I wanted to make sure that I gave myself the best possible chance of actually securing a role. So I connected with a few people that I knew who were working in Dubai, like what is it that I need to include on my CV, what are some interview tips that helped you that I can also use as well. And I actually
Just for clarity, like how did you connect? Was this Instagram? Was this LinkedIn?
Oh, some people I knew. I actually knew them personally.
Okay. Personal connections out there.
Personal connections. Yeah. And also, I'm shameless in the sense that if I want to connect with someone, I will add you on LinkedIn. I will DM you on Instagram or Twitter because I don't know. Even if they say no or they air my message, that's the worst of it. But at least I know I put myself out there to try and, you know, connect and see how I can get some type of advice or help. So I did that and I was actually told I need to make an international CV, that my CV wasn't, at the time, it wasn't kind of good enough. So I had to change my CV and I also included a picture, which was the first time that I actually heard about that. But including a picture with your CV.
International CV, how is that different to a normal CV?
Like the CV that I had here for UK jobs, it was fine. I mean, I was still quite, this was back in 20... Wait, I moved in 2021. So I stayed at a school I was at my school at that time for 4 years. So I hadn't changed my CV in 4 years. Mm-hmm. So there are things that I had done. I really need to boost like the impact that I've had, not just things that I've done. Yeah. What is the impact? What are the metrics? What you did? Yeah, the impact, what you did, the metrics, make sure you include those figures in there. People who were in Dubai told me include a picture in your CV, which I found weird because I thought sometimes, no, because I was thinking like, will this kind of maybe put people off with the simple fact that already my name is an African name. And sometimes that can put you at a disadvantage.
Mm.
Not for everyone, but some people might look at your name and think it's not British or English enough. So I'm like, now that I put a picture there as well, you can already tell by my name, they might not, I don't know, they may not want to hire a black person.
Yeah, yeah.
But that wasn't the case for me in the particular school that I went to. So yeah, I applied, and I applied quite late because I kind of made that decision towards the spring term going into summer term. So yeah, I just made an application on TES, but I also attached my CV. So they had that extra information, and the interview process was just a one-time interview online because obviously I'm not there. And yeah, I was able to secure a role and I started working there 2021.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And then you've been there since?
No. So I was there for a year, then I came back.
Okay.
I came back after I got married. And then me and my husband were like, we were back in London. We're like, oh, we don't know.
London's not the one.
At the time I came back and I saw it was like £2 per litre for petrol.
Yeah, it's crazy,
like,
isn't it?
What does that mean? It was, whereas I think the equivalent that I was paying in Dubai was like 40, 60p per litre. I was like, I don't know, just certain things, the cost of living was crazy. So we just kind of thought about, you know, could we see ourselves in Dubai long term? Is that something that we'd want in terms of starting a family as well? Mm-hmm. Career development and progression. And then we just thought, let's see, let's try it out.
Yeah.
Let's go back.
Oh, that's great. And how different is the education system in Dubai in comparison to the UK in terms of like the caliber of the staff, like what do you guys study in terms of like the curriculum, like who decides the curriculum, like what type of students like do you have, are they from abroad, are they local students, like how does it differ?
So there's a mixture of that. When it comes to the UK, obviously we have private schools here. We have independent schools. We have a lot of state schools. We mainly have state schools here. So most of our students are British, or even if we've come from different countries, it's a UK national curriculum that we're teaching in our schools. Whereas in the UAE, they can teach the Indian curriculum, the American curriculum, the British curriculum, Canadian, Australian curriculum. Like the schools are private, so they can choose the curriculum they want to teach as long as they submit that to the KHDA, which is like the equivalent of the DfE.
Okay.
That we have. So you have to, if you want to start a school, what curriculum are you teaching? And then also you have the public schools, which are for the Emirati students or the Emirati children who probably mainly go there. And that's also very different in terms of the caliber of teachers, you know, teachers from all around the world. The UAE is like a hub, it's like a bubble of all these different international expats. So you have different people from different countries that will teach there. There's a big amount of like English, British, UK teachers, American teachers. And it's depending on the school. So you have different schools. Some schools are premium. Premium means that you're going to be paying more for your child to go to that school, because the caliber of or what they offer in terms of extracurricular activities, in terms of their results, their data, like what, you know, that school must be excellent. So if they're rated outstanding, if they have great results, there will be like maybe a premium or premium plus school. If it's premium plus, it's higher than premium, and then so on. But so you're looking at teachers, they want teachers from like maybe Russell Group Unis to be there. I know one school recently, we were looking at it, they only want teachers who have gone to like Oxford and Cambridge or like Ivy League universities. So it depends on how much each parent or family is paying for their child to go there. I know some schools, if parents are sending their child there, they and it's a British it's a private British school, they want students who are from, they want teachers who are from the UK to be teaching in that school. So I think it just depends on the type of school that it is and what their curriculum offers and what, how much their parents are paying for their child to go there.
And is the education structure the same?
What, like, do you mean?
In terms of like primary, secondary, college, uni, it's the same?
So you have the same, like, you know, nursery, EYFS, primary, secondary, sixth form, A-level. We do have that in the British schools. And then just like, I don't teach anything different than what I was teaching here. So I teach the AQA specification out there, which I've been doing for years. So in terms of the actual content that I'm teaching, it's not anything different to what I was doing in the UK. It's just the cohort of students I'm teaching, like you said earlier, well, when you asked earlier, the kind of students. I have students from all over the world, you know, students from Jordan, from Canada, America, the UK. So it's just, I have more of a diverse cohort.
Yeah.
In terms of where people are from, the countries that people are from in the UAE,
That's interesting. And I've noticed recently as well that there's been like an influx, I say recently, and this could have been happening for a long time, but definitely within the last 3 or 4 years, I've noticed like a big influx of like teachers from the UK going to Dubai to teach. And I wanted to ask, like, where do you think this trend is coming from? Because you could go and teach anywhere outside of London if you don't want to teach in, you know, in London or in the UK. But what is it about Dubai that is drawing people to, like, the education system or to teaching, like, out there? And I'm happy for you to, like, feedback even things like beyond teaching.
Yeah.
Because I know people talk about, like, the accommodation. People talk about, like, the salaries and the benefits and whatever else. Like, what does that look like potentially if it's, you know, if it's something that can draw people away? Because I say this because I know someone that went to study, went to teach in Dubai, and I've seen on social media as well where sometimes people post, like, their accommodation. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, this looks like a uni crib. So, like, what's really like going on? Like, does it depend on the school that you work at? Like, do people get different, like, packages? So it'll be interesting to know, like, you know, what are the things that are drawing people there, and what do those benefits and packages, you know, really look like?
So to answer the first part of your question, what is drawing people to move to Dubai or the Middle East to kind of work there? In the UK, we only get a pay package. This is your salary and that's it, basically. Whereas in the UAE, on top of your pay package, you have the other perks, the benefits of, you know, working there. Like you said, there's accommodation. So out of my salary, I'm not having to pay for accommodation. That's sorted. Some schools might give you a utility allowance, so my bills are covered as well. They have different schemes where teachers, depending on what school you work for, or what company you work for, where you can get different, like, discounts and stuff and so on.
Okay.
The work-life balance. In the UAE, we work 4.5 days a week. So on a Friday, you finish at 12 midday. I think in Sharjah, which is another emirate next door to Dubai, they only work 4 days a week. I think it's Monday to Thursday, I believe. Or maybe I'm wrong. But either way, there's some places where it's only 4 days a week. Okay. There's some places where it's 4.5 days a week. So if I'm finishing work every Friday at 12, I have a long weekend, I can rest more. So yeah, you have the perks of there's accommodation, there might be utility bills, there might be some other discounts and stuff you get as a teacher. There's a flight allowance that schools may give you too. So my flight home every year is paid for, which takes away another...
Is that one flight, two flights, or it varies?
It's, for most schools, I know it's only one. So they only pay for one flight for you to, like a return flight for you to go to your home country.
Yeah.
And it, like you said, it does depend on the school. So some schools, where you said that some people's accommodation looks like uni halls or, you know, yeah, that maybe their school don't have the budget, because I've never lived anywhere that looked like uni accommodation. It might feel like that sometimes because you have other teachers living in the same building. Oh, so okay. Maybe that's the perception that I got. So some schools may actually own the building that the teachers live in, and teachers have apartments in that building.
Okay.
Or some schools have like leased apartments from other companies or whatever. In other buildings, sorry, and that's where you're living. Or they might give you the housing allowance and they say, you go find your own place if that's what you want to do. And if you want to go and find your own place, you can live anywhere you want in Dubai, as long as it's within the budget of what you have. Yeah. And that varies. It varies if you're single, if you're married, if you have children. And when it comes to the benefits as well, some schools, if you have children, they might give you a place in the school for up to 2 dependents in a private international school.
Wow.
If you're in the UK, some people can't afford to send their children to private school. But if I can get that for free...
Some people can't even afford nursery. Nursery's killing our people right now. There you go.
So nursery fees are crazy here. Mm. Whereas in some schools, your child gets a free nursery place right up until the age of 18. And it's in a private international school. They have great facilities there as well. You know the teachers because you work alongside them as a teacher yourself. So it's easy to build that rapport with your child's teachers. It's easy to know what is going on in the school that you're working in that your child also attends. So there are perks to it. And it's just the UAE again has been ranked, I think this year, the second safest country in the world. So if you're thinking about, because I was thinking about it the other day with talking to my husband about it, like, if my child wanted to go out and play, I don't know if I'll feel comfortable. Like, you know, when we were younger, you could take your bike out or you're just playing out with your friends.
Yeah.
But I don't see that really happening. Like now, we're not playing out with children don't really play out with their friends like that. I don't feel safe as a parent thinking, okay, they're outside. God forbid, I don't want nothing to happen to them.
Yeah.
Whereas in the UAE, it's like, you can leave your bag there. No one's going to take it. My child could go out to the mall or whatever, go out with their friends, and I'm not thinking, oh my gosh, are they safe? Is something happening? So safety is a big thing, especially if you want to raise a family.
Yeah. And what are some, are there any misconceptions that people have about teaching in Dubai? From your thoughts?
Some people, it depends on the school. Obviously, different schools may expect different things from their staff. I don't know. Some people have said to me that, we just think it's just easy. And it just looks easier. And I have to tell people it's not.
Oh, that. Okay, people
in the UK think teaching in Dubai is just easier.
Okay,
yeah. I don't always agree with that because, like I say, it depends on the school you work in. Some schools are very corporate. So what they are demanding of you, it takes a lot of energy.
Yeah, very taxing.
We start very early. So schools here might start at like, I don't know, 8:30, 8:45.
Mm-hmm.
I know schools in Dubai are starting at 7:15.
7 a.m.
Yeah. So you need to be at work at 7 or be signed in by at some schools. I don't know. Depends on how it is. And also, I'm also thinking about like it, the time, the how many hours you spend a day. Yes, we're doing 4.5 days a week. But that Monday to Thursday is a lot, the energy you're putting in. Some people are doing multiple roles, but maybe that, because you know how we in the UK, we have a pay scale. So you can go on to, I don't know, TES, or you can go on to the union websites and find what the pay scale is for inner London, outer London.
Yeah,
that's not how it works. So every school, because it's private, it's their company, they have their own maybe individual pay scales.
Okay.
So that's also another thing that you have to consider. So some, I don't know, every school's different.
Yeah.
Some are more corporate. Some are more holistic around the child. Let's focus on that. An Australian school's different to a British school.
Yeah.
The hours that we're working. But during Ramadan, though, we only work like half days, or we finish earlier, like 2 hours earlier.
But I think that's important to know because it shows people actually it's not a one size fits all.
No,
you can hear, you know, about a person's experience online or through a friend or whatever, and then you could go to Dubai and have a totally, you know, different experience based on like the school or the area that you're working in, you know, etc. So yeah, that's definitely interesting to share. I wanted to know as well, like, what some of the biggest challenges that you found teaching in Dubai?
Teaching, I don't think I've actually found a challenge when it comes to teaching. Because like I mentioned earlier, it's the same curriculum. Mm. It's still AQA that I'm teaching, and I've been teaching it for years. So I feel like my subject knowledge is very, very strong on that. So I don't think there's challenge in terms of teaching. Like any school, I don't know. It could be anything that people might find challenging. I know some people find it hard just trying to adapt to living in the UAE.
Mm.
I think that might be challenging, but not the actual teaching.
What is it about adapting to living
being
there
away from family and friends? Because the UK is all you know. If you've grown up here and lived here all your life, I know I struggled when I first moved there because I went by myself. I didn't have any like family there really with me. So it's like that is a struggle. You're learning how things are done in a different country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very different to the UK, but you're by yourself doing it, figuring it out.
Yeah.
In terms of teaching, I feel like I don't know if I can comment on what the struggles around teaching specifically may be, because I haven't particularly had any struggles around teaching.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough. And so I'm assuming then that the teacher retention must be like okay there in Dubai, like not that many teachers are leaving. If the benefits are that good, I don't know, because here it seems as if teachers are leaving, you know, by the floods. Like it's crazy.
I do think that's dependent on the school, but I think one thing that you find a lot is that because people move a lot, Dubai is, or the UAE is there's a big expat community there.
Okay.
But that's why people may not always stay for as long. People might do their 2-year contract and then leave.
Yeah.
So after 2 years, you're looking for someone else. Or 3 years, you're looking for someone else. Because people may just go there, I want to do my couple of years and I want to go back home. Yeah. I want to do my couple of years, I want to move to a different country. So I think once you've done that first move, it's easier for you to then move again.
Okay.
Because it's like, the hardest part of moving was moving away from maybe my family, my friends, all that I know in my home country. I've gone past that hurdle. I can go to another country and do this again now. So I think some schools are amazing at keeping their teachers. And that's maybe down to like the support they give the teachers, the package, the benefits, the salary, like we spoke about. Or some people, after a couple of years, my intention is just to stay here and then to move on. Or some people end up saying, yeah, I'm only going to be here for 2 years, and then they've been in Dubai for 10 years.
Yeah.
It just all depends.
Now that's interesting. And for anyone listening, any young teachers that are saying, you know what, yeah, Dubai, you know, sounds like a good idea, and it's something that I'm going to consider in terms of my future. What's one advice that you would, or maybe one or two things that you'll say, do you know what, before any move, these are the things that you really need to consider. Like, what would those things be?
Before any move, definitely do your research. And I'm going to say do your research because you might find that, you're all around the hype of, you see people living a Dubai lifestyle.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, everyone's going to the beach. Everyone is just at brunch. I don't know. Of course, that does happen as well. But is that all you want out of it? Or is there more? Do your research. It's like, if you don't like teaching here, are you going to like it all of a sudden when you go to Dubai? Are you going to fall back in love with it? Do your research on the school. Do your research on what it is that, you know, you may want to get out of it. I think also going back to how I said everyone loves this whole Dubai lifestyle, you know, we're on a yacht, we're doing this.
Do you teach us? We're on yachts.
That sounds crazy. But it's nothing. That's the norm. Like everyone does a yacht party or something.
Yeah.
But it's like, people literally fall into debt. Crazy. A lot of people fall into debt. I've heard stories of people like, because they, this lifestyle that they want to live, they want to like show people, yeah, this is me. And I mean, each their own, whatever. But I'm a firm believer of staying in your financial lane.
Yeah.
And I don't know who you're stunting for, like, because then you're still gonna owe people money anyway.
Yeah,
so like,
sure.
Don't get sucked into the whole, every week I'm going brunch, every week I'm on a yacht, every week, like. Manage your money, know how to manage your money well, because it's easy, and that's in any country, but it's easy to spend because you see they're at brunch, they're on a yacht, they're at this club, they've got, but I don't know if that's the kind of vibe that you're on, just make sure you want to manage your money. So do your research on why it is you want to go there, what it is you need beforehand, whether it's some documents you need sorted out, the money you need to take there. When you do get there, manage your money. Don't fall into debt because you want to be living a certain lifestyle. And then I also think number three is finding your community in terms of like people who will keep it real with you. Yes, you can have fun, you can enjoy, you can do whatever, I don't know, that you want to do, but also finding your tribe, finding your community of people who will give you the advice that you need or things that they've learned since living there that can help you. People who are teachers, like the Black Teachers Network, I'm going to plug that, you know. Yeah. People, there are people there who work in the UAE who can help you and say, right, if you want to do, you know, if you do want to work there, your CV, you know, just the interview tips, things like that. So, yeah, do your research, manage your finances, and make sure you connect with people and just find that community that will help you feel like you're at home.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. That's amazing. And you mentioned the Black Teachers Network are doing events and stuff abroad as well. So, you know, you've taken essentially your baby or project that you started here, you know, in the UK, and you've transitioned to offer that abroad. So what does it look like abroad? What sort of events, you know, are you guys doing abroad, and why would it benefit, you know, the teachers who are within those communities to engage and be part of those events?
So I just started, I just kind of started with the Black Teachers Network launching in the UAE last year, March, had our first event, which was like just a coffee morning social. And then we had another one at the start of the new academic year in September as well. So it's not, we haven't done a plethora of events yet.
Okay.
We're still kind of working on that because last year I was pregnant, so yeah. I wasn't really doing much. I was just taking it easy. But the good thing about that is there's a community of teachers out there who I didn't think at the start that maybe it was needed there, but it's nice to know that there are other people who look like me, because I do believe representation matters. I do believe the way I was feeling here in terms of wanting that community and that support, people who have left their homes and gone to the UAE, they also need to feel they have that community, that support, and they can also feel at home.
Yeah.
So it's just about supporting one another. That's what we're mainly doing, making sure that, you know, if somebody needs advice, there's somebody there that can help you. That's the main thing. And we will start doing events soon. It's just, I'm just taking it easy postpartum. Yeah. But yeah.
That's amazing. And I know you've written a book.
Yes.
As well. I'm not sure if you mentioned author at the start.
I did.
Yeah. So I know you've written a book as well. Can you tell us a bit more about the book? So what the book is about and why you felt you know like there was a space or a need for you know that literature in our community.
So I co-authored the book with another woman called Karen, and it's called Black in School: The Black Teacher's Guide to Surviving the Classroom. And I had this idea for a book years ago, and when I met Karen, she also had a similar idea. So it was like, let's bring our two brains together. And let's make this our baby, so we can support each other in the writing process and getting this out into the world, because we really feel like we had something, different perspectives, different experiences, but we really had something that was also similar that we can share with the world. So the reason why we co-authored this book is because not everyone has the same experience, right? I've never been a CEO of a school, so I can't give you the experience of that, or I can't give you that perspective. I've never been a head of yet, so I can't give you that perspective. I'm not a Black man, so I can't give you that perspective. So this book has so many contributors who have literally given their experiences and their perspective of working, I don't know, in the UK, abroad, in different countries, working at a CEO, head teacher level, middle leader level, support staff level, working for the council, working in a non-teaching role. We have different people who have contributed to this book, who have shared their insights on what it means to be Black in education, and trying to ensure that not only are we just surviving it, but we are actually making progress and we're supporting one another, and we can see ourselves at every level of the education sector. I think it's important because and I say this all the time, the book is not just for black people. Mm. It's written from a black person's perspective so that everybody can understand it. So if you're a head teacher, whether you're black, white or Asian, whatever, if you really want to cause effective change, you know, strategic change, business change, policy, this book will definitely help you to think about your staff. What is it that you're doing to help them, to support them? What is it that they're not telling you? Because maybe they might not feel comfortable, but you can read it in this book and think, hold on, does anybody else in my school feel this way? How can I make sure that we are diverse? There is equity, there is equality, there is inclusion. Mm. And we have big questions in every chapter of the book to really get people to think and reflect. Like, what is it that I'm doing or what is it that I'm not doing? Yeah. Where is it that I can improve my school, not just for the teachers, but also the students? So I just want that book to really hit home. I want it to make a big change in education so that everyone, whether you're a CEO, a head teacher, I don't know, you work as part of a trust, you're in an independent school, a private school, a state school, what is it that you can do to make that education experience better for your staff and your students?
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. And I think I liked when you mentioned that, you know, the book is not for black people, but it's just offering the black perspective. Because mm-hmm. I think that is, you know, that's key. That's key in not only amplifying, you know, our voices and our experience, but it gives our community and the wider community, you know, those who are black, those who are white and whatever else, an understanding of our experiences, you know, within education. And it essentially, that was you saying that was like a light bulb moment for me, because even in terms of, you know, the podcast and the platform that, you know, I have, and I'm always conscious of, you know, my guests as well. And, you know, I try to have, you know, a mix of guests in terms of like professions, gender, etc. But I really want to emphasize the black perspective.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that this podcast is for black people, but it's just about amplifying, you know, the voices
yeah.
from a black perspective. Voices that often, you know, aren't heard or aren't listened to. So it's amazing to you know, to have that resource.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing to have that resource that you can share you know, with the wider community. So yeah, that's amazing. And just for the audience, if you just want to share like the title of the book and where they can purchase it from as well.
So it's called Black in School, The Black Teacher's Guide to Surviving the Classroom. And you can find it on Amazon, Waterstones, WH Smith, Sage UK, Sage US. So yeah, you can.
That's amazing. Great stuff. Great platforms. Stuff. So as we sort of start to round up, when you look back at your school experiences, when, you know, you was in secondary school, sixth form, uni, etc. Mm-hmm. Like, did you foresee yourself being in this position, like within education? Like, when did that shift come into place where you saw education, you saw teaching, and you realized that this was somewhere that you thrived, and this was somewhere that you felt that you had a purpose?
Interesting. Yannick, if I'm going to be completely honest with you, I never wanted to be a teacher. That was never the plan.
Why do all the teachers, no. not all, some teachers say like, you know what, they had that. But no, it wasn't. What was it?
I didn't want to be broke. First of all, I graduated from uni and I refused to be broke. So I got a job in a school as a TA.
Yeah.
And I loved working with young people and I was working with students with special educational needs.
Yeah.
That's why I became a Senko. Because I realised that they need support. They need someone who's advocating for them as well. But I could only become a Senko if I had a teaching qualification.
Yeah.
And I had a science, I had a sports science degree. So I thought, right, I've got a science degree. Might as well become a science teacher. I was going to become a PE teacher, actually.
Yeah.
Then I changed to science. And then became a Senko. And it's just, I never saw this happening because I didn't plan on becoming a teacher, but I loved working with young people and I love bringing people together. So working with young people, being in a school allows me to do that, you know, and have like whole school impact in terms of the roles that I've done, from being a TA and working my way up to an assistant head teacher. But then also bringing people together, that's what the Black Teachers Network is about. I love bringing people together and just supporting. Or if I can't support you, I can connect you to someone who can. You know, at least you have, you know, there's something there. When you spoke about, you know, having the resource there, that's what it really is. And that's big for me with the Black community. So, when I was at uni, when I was in secondary school, sixth form, I never saw myself being where I am today. I never saw myself even being able to work internationally. Like, working, that wasn't something that I saw. I just saw myself as maybe, you know, you grow up, you get your degree, you find a job that you do and you just do that until you retire. I don't know. But my horizons have broadened. I can now see that there's more out there for me. There's more that I still want to do. And I'm looking forward to what the next 10, 20 years have in store for me and what God has in store for me, because I feel like there's more that I want to give. There's more that I want to give. There's more that I want to do. Don't know how, but yeah, I'll have the grace to do it somehow.
No, that's good to hear, man. And I think, you know, sometimes we're often drawn towards certain professions and certain roles, and you know, in terms of our mind and our intentions, is not something that we're intentionally saying, you know what, this is what we want to do. But whether it's, you know, our heart, or whether it's the successes that we're having, you know, when we're engaging with you know, the young people that we work with, and I would say it's similar for me. You know, I didn't sort of go into education thinking that this is what I wanted to do. Like, I went into like the youth offending service from uni, and that was based on like own personal experiences and seeing, you know what, I want to help those young boys. But in like my first couple of years there, I felt that, you know, I'm making an impact, but it's not the impact that I want to make. And where can I get them earlier? Because before they get to this stage, like, where are they? They're in school. So I said, okay, like, let me transition, go into school and education. And then after that, it was just, you know, everything's just moved and excelled, you know, from there. So I think it's a blessing nonetheless, even though this wasn't, you know, the path that, you know, you had your mind set on. But it's good to see, you know, how far you've come. And just to finish off, I wanted to ask, so when you look at everything that you've done so far in education, the books, working internationally.
I like how you said the books. So there'll be more, yeah? I like that.
Yeah, the books. Yeah. And I'm going to be in the next one, because I know I wasn't in this one. But the books and, volume, you know, the speaking engagements, etc. Like what legacy do you want to leave behind in education? And have you thought that far in terms of what you want to leave behind?
I haven't actually. I don't know if I've thought about legacy, but now that you've asked that question, I'm thinking, I just want people to know that I did what I said I was going to do. So in terms of advocating for students with special educational needs and disabilities, I did that. In terms of supporting Black teachers and Black students, I did that. That I'm somebody who did what she said she was going to do. And if that inspires someone, or if that helps someone, then that's enough for me, because somebody helped me, so I want to make sure that I can help someone else.
Yeah.
I think, and I just also think about what the landscape of education will look like when my son is in school. Or when my grandkids are in school. I don't know what it's going to look like, but I wouldn't want us to be having the same conversation that we're having now. Yeah. That would be like, what progress have we actually made? Yeah. I don't want it to be 2% of Black teachers still in education 10, 20, 30 years time from now. Because we know people are leaving teaching, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, if people are leaving teaching, that means Black people are also leaving teaching. I just want to make sure that not only are we supporting people to get into teaching, if that's what they want to do, but how do we retain them, that teacher retention? How do you make sure that they're supported?
Yeah.
I want my legacy to be that I said, you know, she said what she said she was going to do, and that along the way she ensured that she helped and she really supported people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's powerful. That's powerful. Yeah, that's giving me food for thought, even in terms of me and thinking about, you know, my son. This is why I do the work that I do within, you know, education. This is why I amplify, you know, the voices of the guests that I have on within their various fields, whether it's alternative provisions, pupil referral units, you know, if we're talking like with educational psychologists, whether we're talking about special educational needs as well, amplifying those voices so that the people who need to hear are listening.
I'm trying to cut you off, but what you even said about the PRUs, the pupil referral units, that's where I enjoyed working the most. When I was working there and working with those, 90% of my students were Black. And what you said about trying to get in there before they, trying to get into schools before it becomes a thing of like, you know, you're working on the youth offender side. You don't want them to get that far. And then seeing that we could intercept at that stage before it got too far, it's so important. So,
It's purposeful work. And, you know, we want to make those changes so that our children, you know, our sons and daughters are growing up in a world where, you know, there is equity in their education, essentially. So yeah, that's very important. So Kemi, thank you again for joining us
for this
episode. It's been very insightful and very informative. So thank you. So that was the Too Cool for School podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow us on our social media platforms and subscribe to our YouTube page. Thank you.